So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, we're going to dive into some of NVIDIA's news from its GTC Developers Conference. We've got some fun laptop news from Microsoft. The Surface Laptop 4 was finally announced, and Sherlyn's going to be diving into her fun experience with the OnePlus Watch. Stay tuned. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the podcast, please be sure to subscribe on iTunes and your podcatchers of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. That seriously makes a difference. And drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. Let's move right into NVIDIA and what's going on this week. It is it's GTC week here, and that is a week-long developer conference where NVIDIA kind of goes deep and tells us everything it's working on, some upcoming hardware and things like that. I'll tell you guys, most of the announcements, and I sat through all the briefings and sifted through all the press releases and everything, not really for us. A lot of it's for folks like AnandTech and, you know, the TechCrunch side, like business news, cloud news, data center stuff, and AI news. But there are some things I found kind of interesting. I wrote up the news around their first data center CPU, which is called Grace, which is named after Grace Hopper. It's their first data center CPU, so that's the key. And it's ARM-based, which is kind of interesting because right now in the server and data center world, we're seeing a shift from x86 Intel and AMD-based CPUs to ARM-based chips. And ARM, if you've been listening to the show, you kind of know what we're talking about. Those are mobile chips. Those are the things that are in your smartphones, in a lot of tablets. They are smaller, more power efficient, and getting more and more powerful every day. I looked at this NVIDIA news. It seems a lot like what Apple did with the M1 chip, whereas Apple was aiming for, hey, we don't need Intel anymore on the desktop side or on our, you know, PC side. NVIDIA's kind of doing that with the server side because now they don't need to, you know, ship these chips that are paired together with NVIDIA or with any x86 hardware. So that's not even Intel or AMD hardware. They can kind of own their own lane here, and Grace is a powerful new CPU that's going to be in supercomputers down the line. They've got several partners already. It's interesting news. It won't directly affect any of us, but I do think like this is a big shift towards ARM. We're seeing more and more people do this. Have any thoughts on this, Sherlyn?
I mean, the shift towards ARM, like you said, is interesting. I wonder if like data center CPUs need a lot of power or you know, need to be more mobile, need to be more power efficient. I mean, in general, obviously power efficiency is better, but like a data center doesn't seem to need battery life.
They don't need battery life, but they certainly, data centers draw power, right? Power is the resource that we're still talking about when it comes to computing. It is the big controversy around Bitcoin and other digital currencies because those things require power to, you know, process their currencies. So power is still a big thing. It's also about carbon usage and things like that. So if you're drawing more power, you're hurting the environment more. But also, I think on a fundamental, you know, money level, moving over to ARM chips just means you're paying less for power on your servers, which is good. You know, more efficient, capable servers. These chips are still really powerful. You look at my review of the you know, Apple M1 and the MacBook Air and everything. I was shocked by what that little chip could do and really go toe-to-toe with the x86, the big stuff from Intel and AMD. So we are getting this is like a really interesting inflection point. I do think NVIDIA is just taking a solid first step here. They have announced some initial customers. That includes, let me see here, the Swiss National Supercomputing Center, the CSCS, and the Department of Energy's Los Alamos National Laboratory. They're both going to be having Grace-powered systems in 2023. Powered, built by Hewlett Packard Enterprise. So these are big deals, and NVIDIA is taking a big step here towards not a new market because they've had, you know, kind of supercomputer tech around before, but certainly a market that is kind of a leap beyond what they're capable of doing with the x86 stuff now. So related to that, if you don't care about servers or data centers, fine. Mm-hmm. But NVIDIA also announced that they are working together with MediaTek to bring RTX graphics to some ARM-based laptops, which is also kind of interesting. It was just one paragraph in the news, right? But it is a really intriguing paragraph because they're like, well, imagine future Chromebooks, right, that have a MediaTek ARM processor that is power efficient, very thin and light and everything, and maybe a little powerful, but also has an NVIDIA RTX graphics card. That is kind of wild to me. Thoughts on this, Sherlyn, because this is your kind of your wheelhouse, the ARM computers.
I saw this headline just now for the first time, and you know, on our right before we got on the live stream, you saw how I reacted. I just laughed out loud for like a minute because I know MediaTek has been really, it's been around for a long time. Yeah. And in the past decade, and minus the last few years, but in the decade, right, before today, it's been sort of known as that like cheaper alternative to Qualcomm.
Yeah.
And often has a bad rap for like just not having the same muscle. And you know, because it's cheaper and not as powerful, MediaTek chips are widely popular in things like smart home devices because you don't need that much, you don't need to be that fast. Mm-hmm. Smart displays, smart home devices, that sort of stuff. And now to hear that they're targeting ARM-based laptops by teaming up with NVIDIA for ray tracing graphics, that's just intriguing. Because first, let's set aside the idea that it's just ARM Chromebooks. Because
right.
Feels like ARM and Chromebooks is kind of an okay mix. You know what I mean? Like, not a lot of power necessary.
It seems perfect for a type of computer that I don't think is a
right,
fully
like a limited,
capable
very limited,
PC. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Like, that's the right-ish OS for ARM, right? Mm-hmm. It feels like. But maybe it's because there's always been software limitations on Windows side that makes it hard to see ARM's full prowess. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, but, like, in that scenario, in that use case situation, ray tracing? Well, what are you doing on Chrome
I don't,
OS?
Listen, I don't know how much of that we'll actually see, but it is certainly the power of RTX graphics. That's what they're kind of getting at. So you're not going to be playing, like, you know, Destiny 2 on a Chromebook, maybe natively, but maybe some. Like, I don't know what MediaTek's graphics technology is like, right? So they're not like Qualcomm, which actually does get some decent GPU stuff. Apple custom developed their own GPU for the M1 chip. So graphics is more and more important these days. That's all.
Yeah. So for I mean, for people at home who are curious to see if like one of the devices you own has a MediaTek processor to see how it performs, MediaTek device, I mean, their chip names start with the model number MTK, and then, you know, either a Helios something or other is one of their newer CPUs. And they've had better architecture over time. They're really chasing the 5G game. They, you know, I think fairly recently announced some sort of 5G collaboration with a big company. I'm not recalling off the top of my head right now either, but MediaTek is really trying. While I still see software being a potential challenge they all need to overcome, because yes, you have the power of ray tracing for gaming, graphic editing, and video editing, perhaps. There's the apps need to support it. The emulator needs to not be clunky. There's a lot still in between, but it's nice to see ARM get a lot of love.
Yeah, I mean, we are certainly Apple's move last year with the M1 kind of shifted the entire landscape, and we saw what was possible. But that's also, you know, a very custom specific processor built for Apple's hardware and stuff. So now we're seeing how is the rest of the PC world going to be able to catch up. And certainly Windows on ARM is a thing we've looked at for years. I'm not a big fan. I've never liked a Windows on ARM machine. You've reviewed a couple, Sherlyn. That's more Microsoft's problem of not even making apps properly compatible or giving us a good backwards compatibility layer in the way that Apple did. Because with Apple, it's like it's just all seamless. Like, they have an x86 layer. Older apps work mostly just fine. And in many cases are faster than many x86 PC laptops. So,
surprisingly so. Surprisingly. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. Rosetta is the name of their emulator, and it does an amazing job. Holy crap. It's not meant to stick around forever. Like, Apple is fully moving to ARM. I think that commitment to migrating fully to ARM is what's driving some of this like race to build ARM machines. Because they're like, oh, the M1 does so great. Mm-hmm. Why can't we replicate that?
And certainly that does seem like the future, right? Everybody wants thin and light machines. Like, that is the hot sexiness that everybody jumps for in PC hardware. But there are limitations in what you can do with x86 chips. AMD only recently started like making small power efficient laptop chips. Intel's really struggling with that. So if you want like a magical laptop, right, that weighs under 1 pound and still has a decent screen and everything, like, you know, we're going to need to rely on mobile chips. I feel like the Surface Pro X was the kind of a good glimpse at where things could go on the high end. But I hated that device. I think you hated that device too, Sherlyn, because it was an ARM chip and Windows on ARM is just not ready yet.
Hoi, 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 hoi. We've talked about this. The Microsoft fans are going to come from IDMs. We're just going to leave it at that.
So speaking of Microsoft laptops, they announced the Surface Laptop 4 this week. This is the fourth iteration of their most normal Surface, right? The Surface Laptop is just a laptop. It has a nice touchscreen. It has like the same, 3x2 aspect ratio that a lot of the Surfaces do. So it's kind of a square screen. But beyond that, It's a kind of a minimalist PC, you know? I feel like Microsoft was really chasing the MacBook Air with these things. But the weird thing is, I remember the last time they announced some Surface devices, Sherlyn, we went to an event in New York City. There was a lot of news happening all at once. They announced the first 15-inch Surface with some AMD Ryzen chips. Nothing has really changed since that event. So these new Surfaces look exactly the same. They're still 13.5-inch and 15-inch models. The big difference is now you have a choice of AMD processors and Intel processors across both. Last time, it was just kind of an AMD special choice on the 15-inch. But yeah, they didn't really change much, which is, to me, kind of disappointing. I do like it when Microsoft is like pushing boundaries a little more, but they are just being super reserved with this laptop. So I actually have a 15-inch Surface Laptop 4 right here next to me that I'm testing. And man, looking at this thing now, it's like it is a nice looking machine, but I really wish those screen bezels were slimmer. You know, I really wish it looked a little more modern. I would love a little more connectivity. The nice thing about the hardware changes is that it does support 11th generation Intel processors. So, you know, the really cool Intel Xe graphics, you know, that you can get that as a part of things. And the Ryzen chips look good too, but they're only Zen 2 processors, not the newer Zen 3 hardware that we're seeing in every laptop this year. So once again, Microsoft feels like it's a little behind the curve. Yeah, I'm working on my review right now for this thing. I kind of want to call it the Normcore laptop because it is just so, it's just fine. It is the laptop for when, you know, your grandma or grandpa or somebody walks into a Microsoft store or a Best Buy or something. It's like, I just need a laptop. I don't need anything fancy. This is the simple Apple-esque decision that they can make. Personally, and so I'm going to say this in my review, I think for the price and certainly for the hardware, the XPS 13, the XPS 15, they're right there. And they have beautiful screens that don't have edges. Yeah.
When you started talking about this, I was like, when's he going to bring out the Dell XPS 13?
When am I? Or any other major laptop, right? The Envy, the HP Envy lineup, any of the major companies.
HP Spectre is probably more in line, but
Lineup. It's a little disappointing, and really just talking to Microsoft folks, like they're always talking about what they can remove from the laptop experience to make it simpler, and maybe for a certain audience that is what they need, certainly the more mainstream audience, but there are just so many disappointing things here. There's still no Thunderbolt support, so if you want to connect a really modern, storage device or something, or even an external GPU, which is a thing some people do, you can't do that with this because for some reason Microsoft just doesn't like that interface. Thankfully, there is USB-A, there is USB-C with USB-C charging. That's something they introduced during the last round. But beyond that, man, it is just more of the same. So look for my review soon. We also saw a bunch of modern accessories from Microsoft, which I think are more, these are the new things. These are the things they haven't done in a while. There's a modern Microsoft webcam, which is the first webcam from Microsoft that I've seen in years. They used to have like a Life 360 or some type of Life branded webcam, but it is kind of cool to see that they're just getting back into really bread and butter basic accessories. So they have webcams, they have multiple headsets, they have a $100 USB-C speaker that can also take phone calls or Teams meetings and things like that. They've even revamped the Surface headphones. There's a new Surface Headphones 2 Plus model that has a Teams button on the side, which, okay, I don't know. Maybe somebody who uses Teams a lot will really, really love that. But, you know, it's just basic stuff that you'll be seeing in stores from Microsoft, basically. So this feels like Apple-esque moves. Simple hardware. I need a webcam. I need, you know, a headset with a microphone. Go to the store, see this thing, has Microsoft's name on it. Seems just fine. The previous Microsoft webcam I was thinking of, that was the Lifecam HD 3000, which came out in 2011. And they kind of gave up on that a while ago.
Yeah.
Just interesting to see. So nothing super exciting. There's no real new Surface tablet hardware. There's nothing super interesting or bold that they're doing. Maybe they're saving that for the end of the year. This is the sort of like mid-year lulls we're in.
I suspect that's also why they did it without fanfare, right? Like usually when they have a big set of things to announce, we have an event, and whether it's virtual or in person, usually also to me the October Surface event is usually the fun one. That's when they save all the interesting news. I do personally like the Surface laptop line.
It's nice.
I used the Surface Laptop 2, I think, as my main for a while. Years ago, I guess. And really, it's simplistic, it's minimal. I like it. It's got all the basics right.
But how long ago was that, Sherlyn? That was like 3 years ago, right?
Yeah, if it was the Surface Laptop 2, it was like that long ago, three years ago. And my main gripe with it back then was that like the proprietary charger. It was a proprietary charger, not USB-C charger. But they've changed that.
They've changed that, but the basic shape of the case and everything,
right?
Exactly the same. This is the screen
still,
tech.
It still looks exactly the same. Yeah,
exactly the same. So there is no like modernization. I carried the original Surface Laptop around for a while after I reviewed it, and that was 4 years ago, I think. Just reviewing the stuff now, like the hardware just hasn't changed. They've moved away from putting Alcantara on everything. So this one I have right now is just like a nice straight metal case. It is all the same. So, hey, disappointing to me, but I'm sure mainstream people will be really into it.
And I will say for their accessories that you were mentioning, a lot of my friends, I guess, I don't know if in tech or not, but some of my friends actually really like Microsoft's like mice.
Yeah, great mice, great keyboards.
Yeah, not enough love like for their accessories. Keyboards. Exactly. So it's nice to see them do a webcam. I might want to look into that.
You may want to, but really just go Logitech, really. This is the fight. And also for when it comes to keyboards and mice, it is really the fight is between Microsoft and Logitech. I'm a Logitech fan right now, but I've certainly used a lot of Microsoft stuff in my day.
I use a Logitech mouse and a Logitech webcam right now, so totally.
There you go. And super, like, Logitech is just a cool company, too. I did an interview with their CEO several years ago. They are so humble in a weird way and not very like they don't really brag as much as much as other companies. So anyway, check out that piece too. Sherlyn, let us move on to your review experience with the OnePlus which sounds like just pure drama to me.
So I don't even really know where to start with this, but okay. OnePlus Watch is the company's first ever smartwatch. And you know, if you've been following OnePlus News for a while now, you'll know that the company actually has been working on a smartwatch forever, since at least 2015. Back in 2016, co-founder and then director, he doesn't work there anymore, Carl Pei, tweeted out some pictures of a smartwatch that never came to be, that they've been working on, some sketches. So it's been a while. The reason I give you this background is because after playing with the OnePlus Watch a bunch, it feels like this is the watch they were preparing to launch like all that long ago, like all that many years ago. Because so much of what we have with it is outdated. It doesn't compare to modern smartwatches. The only things that OnePlus has done to differentiate here and has executed well anyway is fast charging and the price. It's $159.
Oh, okay.
And it promises to get you like 7 days of juice and 20 minutes of charging, which is like a vague number. I don't like 7 days of juice because that's a really silly number, but it's about like from 0 to 43%. And that's, well, I say zero, maybe one to 43%, but like it's impressive. It's very fast for a smartwatch, and smartwatches are slow when it comes to charging. Mm-hmm. So those are the two saving graces about this. Let's jump into like, this whole review experience. Holy crap.
Let me just say your first line in our notes to talk about this review is shit, shit, shit. It's so shit. And I feel like that should have been the title of your review.
I try to refrain from being too extreme in our reviews, and it may
some
like
things deserve it. Come on.
I do. I agree. I mean, I feel like I had a fairly scathing review, but yeah. I also in my head, and I shouldn't, but in my head, I can hear all the OnePlus fans coming for me. So I'm just like, okay, well, I'm just also trying to be fair. So anyway, normally when you get a watch to review, you know, you start playing with it and you get like the guidelines as to like how to set it up and everything. This, and then you start having problems and questions and whatever, and you start talking to the company reps and you have like a dialogue. I had questions for OnePlus like Wednesday or Thursday, sent them Thursday. I never got a response until like, they were silent until like Monday, the day before the embargo lifted. Mm-hmm. And then all throughout the process, the updates were coming like fast and furious for me. Like I just kept getting update notifications. I'm just like, how many times are you gonna update this watch while I'm reviewing it? And these updates were to fix little things like, oh, oops, sorry, automatic workout detection wasn't working. Here you go. And then, oops, we're not doing that prompt you to move thing. Now we got it fixed. Oh, here you go, another update. And whenever you have a review that's starting to go bad like this, you A, wonder if you have a, you know, defective unit, or and B is like, is everyone having the same experience, or did you do something dumb? Like, as a reviewer, I'm always like, what did I get wrong? Like,
because you can't just go to Google, right, and search around for things. So you have to talk to other people to only know what's going on. Yeah.
Yes. So I'm lucky and blessed enough, hashtag blessed, to have like a group chat of like reviewers who I know also will have the OnePlus watch. And we were just talking about it, and all of across the board, our experiences were equally shit. And like, not even on the exact same things. Some of us had the exact same experience on things, but some people were like, oh, this works for me, but that other thing doesn't work. And it's like we all, instead of hearing back from OnePlus as to how to fix what issues were going on, we actually like just troubleshoot, like we had to troubleshoot amongst ourselves.
So you were doing the work for them because they're going to take your findings and put it into the product too. So,
yeah. And so I think I only started checking in with a group chat a couple of days into the review period because I was like, wait, this is not just me. This is pretty bad. And so I hit up the group chat, which included like reviewers from other sites like Verge and Wired and Gizmodo. And I said, hey, who else is reviewing this thing? And I said, who else is reviewing the OnePlus Watch? And from Verge, Dieter and Dan were in there, and Dieter was like, you mean the Amazfit? I was like, oh, that's such a perfect analogy. This is exactly one of those like white, what's that word
white
for
label,
when a company?
White label, OEM white label, thank type you. Stuff, yeah.
White label, yeah, this is exactly the kind of like cheap $20 watch you can get off of like Amazon with that same sort of basic software. You wouldn't expect this from a OnePlus. Like OnePlus has come too far for it to be delivering things like this anymore. I could go on this rant forever.
Yeah.
Like,
can
I
you
really
talk
could.
More about the software, right? So what you're saying is this is a like a very localized software system, right? This isn't it's not Android Wear or anything.
Right. It's not Wear OS. It's using it's OnePlus's own version of an RTOS, a real-time operating system. Mm-hmm, and RTOS, if you've read a lot of the reviews, you'll know RTOS is basically the same base for a lot of things like the Amazfit or like, all the watches we see on the show floor of CES that don't have a big company behind them, that sort of thing. So it's very basic. You can swipe sideways to see some widgets, and there seems to be a limit on how many. And then you press the top button, and you can scroll through a vertical list of all your apps, which are few. And then you can swipe up to pull down quick settings, and you swipe down to see your quick settings, and swipe up to see your notifications. Oh my gosh, when we talk about the notifications, holy crap. Like, First of all, a few of them, like some, there was a glitch during the review process where like one notification would come in on your phone, but the watch will ping you four times about it. Like four notifications would show up on the watch. So like, I thought my friends were being annoying for texting me too much, and I was almost going to yell at them. I was going to be like, shut the F up, you assholes. And it was just a watch.
This is how you talk to your friends, by the way.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. This is truly, I'm always just like, you mother lovers.
And they're like, why are we friends with this girl?
She's just so charming. Anyway, so that's one issue. And then the other thing is like on some apps like WhatsApp, Telegram, some other messaging apps, I believe Signal and Line. I'm not up to speed. I know WhatsApp and Telegram for sure. Mm-hmm. Anyway, in those apps, you can choose to send a reply via the watch. Mm. Nice, right? Isn't that great? Yeah, okay. The replies you can send are, okay, in a meeting, call you later. Driving, call you later. And like, see you soon. Or like the fourth one is just like three words or something, and I can't remember the exact. But like, that's it. That's the four. You can say one of those things. And so like, us, the group chat reviewers, we were just trolling each other, like replying to the group chat with these like canned messages. Like, oop, in a meeting, call you back. Oop, driving, call you back. Like, you can't change these. You can't go into the app to like, you know, set up your preferred dictated reply. Yeah.
Can you dictate a reply? Voice replies?
No, you can't. No? You can't. Mm. You can take calls on the watch, but you can't dictate a reply for some reason. Mm. There's no, I guess, speech recognition engine. So that's clunky as hell. And that's like, even Fitbits from like 3 years ago fixed that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's, and basic Fitbits can do that now. The Charge 4 or the Versa can already do that. So anyhow.
Yeah.
It's trying to like calm back down to like not get too mad.
Everything you're talking about, Trillin, does harken back to our advice to never buy a first generation product from a company going into something new, right? These are all first gen problems that it sounds like they're dealing with, right?
Absolutely. They need to learn. And this, like, I'll grant them that this is an affordable product. And on some level, it works. But like, look.
Yeah.
If that's the best thing I can say about it, it works and it charges fast. And hey, great. I took a fitness tracking a bunch. Like, I was like pretty nuts and I took like the Galaxy Watch Active, the Apple Watch, and the OnePlus Watch out to like the
gym. All on your wrists at the same time.
Yeah. And I'm not testing the sensor accuracy there. So, like, that's not the best way to judge sensor accuracy. But I'm more looking at overall kind of what the differences are in the experience. So, which one interrupts you the most? Which one, you know, has like gives you the best readings, like displays the your session details afterwards in the nicest way? And to be fair, I like OnePlus's layout. When I'm done with a run, it'll show me like, oh, here are the number of minutes you spent in a certain zone. Like you were fat burning a lot of time. You were at your extreme end or at your peak most of the time or something. It's nice. I didn't have a lot of the issues that some of the other reviewers had. Throughout the review process, a lot of people were saying the steps were being undercounted. I know Michael Fisher, Mr. Mobile, he had a Garmin on and the OnePlus watch on at the same time, and his count was off by about 10,000 steps. That is not as bad as poor Victoria Song from Gizmodo, who I didn't speak to during the review process because we're not in the group chat. We're not that close as friends. I don't know on a personal level, but her review was just like a joy for me to read because like it was like someone else that I didn't speak to had the same experience and it was much worse. She took it on a walk where, like, I think the Apple Watch reported either 10,000 plus or 100,000 plus steps. I don't know, big number. Can't remember the exact number right now.
100,000 in the end,
the OnePlus Watch. Yeah, it was a lot. The OnePlus Watch said it counted 103 steps. Like, what the hell? What? Imagine if you're like, for me, I'm trying to calculate my calorie burn. Quite like when I'm going on like a workout, right? And like you're there trying to like gauge your performance. And your watch is telling you you got 103 steps. Like
literally the most basic thing a smartwatch needs to do. You can buy a hybrid watch that doesn't even have a screen that can count steps these days. So
yeah.
If you fail at that, you fail at life. You know, it's like going to a restaurant and like the most basic dish they can't even cook. So
And I hated wearing this to sleep, so I like wore it for as little time as I could. Like the second I woke up in the morning, I threw it off the bed, that sort of thing. Like that's
probably
how I did it.
Probably not a good sign. Probably. Yeah. Probably
it's
not.
Huge. Yeah. It's huge. One of our biggest issues with it is that like it is freaking, like one of the reasons I probably got some inaccurate readings during my workouts is because it's too loose for me. It's ridiculously loose. I could swap it out, yes, for a tighter band, but you're already like, why can't I just pay less than people, the same price as people getting the big one? Why do I have to pay more just because I have a smaller wrist? Like this is the opposite problem of like the, you know, that people keep encountering. So anyway, that's my rant and my
so I'll say it doesn't sound like this device shifts our smartwatch recommendations for people. If you have an iPhone, just get an Apple Watch.
Stick to an Apple
likely,
Watch, yeah.
Or get a Fitbit if you like to go specialize, or get a Garmin if you really, really like to exercise and want to have full GPS, right? For Android, it is... What are your choices now for Android? Fitbit and Samsung?
Yeah, so for the app... First of all, for iOS, the OnePlus Watch is not an option. It's just Android for now. So, for Android users, I used to say the Galaxy Watch is my go-to.
Used to love the Galaxy Watch.
I do still, and it's really good. Honestly, like Tizen OS is still very good, but it had issues when I was working out with being. It's a little, especially if you're running. Like if you're a runner, you go for Garmin. If you're a runner, the Galaxy Watch Active might not be great because it was really annoying me the whole time. Like I was running, and then every time I was like, "Good work, keep up this pace for another 30 seconds." I'm like, "All right, cool, 30 seconds. Good work, keep up this pace." I'm like, "I don't need you to freaking, I don't want to keep looking at my wrist. Yeah. I'm just in the zone running." And then they're like, "Too slow, speed up." And then too fast, slow
Stop
down.
Looking
like,
at your
calm
wrist.
Calm down, Mom. Calm down, Mom. Exactly, I don't need you to. Anyway, that's my main gripe, I think, right now with the Galaxy Watch. It also had some like distance measurement issues, but not as bad as the OnePlus Watch. I feel like it came quite close to the Apple Watch and the actual distance that I walked outside. But yeah, the Galaxy Watch is still one of the better ones for Android phone people. But I'd say like it sounds like now that Google and Fitbit have completed their merge, I'd hold off and wait to see what they do, because that actually would be very interesting.
That would be like the Apple Watch equivalent to Android, right? If just Google fingers crossed, maybe by the end of the year. But wearables are such a weird market, folks. Like, not much has changed for so many things. I have a fourth-gen Apple Watch, which I think was the big redesign, and still don't feel compelled to look at any of the newer stuff just yet. So we'll see. Keep an eye on all of our coverage of all these smartwatches. Anything else, Sherlyn?
Yeah, just to quickly like wrap up that Google Pixel thing, a Google Fitbit thing. There were rumors of a Pixel Watch late last week, I think Friday or so. So it sounds like something is brewing. So yeah, like Devinder said, yes, it's not super exciting right now in the land of smartwatches. They've kind of like found their place, and I think that you're not going to get too much new and exciting out of them after this. But if you're interested in keeping tabs on your health, they're fairly helpful. So there has been plenty of other news this week. I mean, the hits just kept coming, but we're going to highlight a few of them for you. First off, Apple finally announced its April event that we've been anticipating. I mean, it started earlier in the week with like when you start asking Siri when the next Apple event is, it would tell you the date. And I think that's when Apple was like, oops, I guess we can't keep this a secret all that much longer, I think. So Apple's event is coming up on April 20th. I wonder if that's high time for something.
Very symbolic. Apple vape tech.
Yeah, who knows?
There we go. I'll say, I think they showed off some videos for this event, and the videos all look like freaking AR overlays over the real world. So I think they're being very, very coy. Like we're going to see the AR glasses soon.
Yeah, and we like to play guess the device or guess the news from the invitation graphic and stuff like that, right? And so the words on the invitation this time around were spring loaded, with like some colorful squiggles that look sort of like a spring shape, I guess.
But you know what that squiggle is?
Well, first, the word spring is like a play on the season spring and also component spring. So nice way to go there, pun Apple. But yes,
way
Devinder,
to go, pun.
What did you?
Well, no, if you look at this, if you look at the actual invite, right, it is a twisted kind of design. If anybody, if you have seen the way VR painting apps work, that is the sort of thing you can create, basically. So it's like, this is something where somebody could have taken a controller and just made a couple loops in the air. This is what the 2D representation of that will be, but I'm sure they'll do something where, like, they take their phone and then all of a sudden are just walking around this thing, or show off the glasses by walking around one of these designs. So yeah, we'll see.
I mean, it could also just be like another iPad pencil scribble thing. It could be anything.
It could
honestly
be. It could be.
It's anyone's guess right now. But yeah, so stay tuned for that. April 20th, we will be live streaming. Well, we won't be live streaming Apple's event on our site, but we will
be
there
live
right
commenting after.
Doing a post show. It'll be Chris Velasco, our Apple guy, and myself, yours truly. So we'll be there whenever Apple stream ends. And Apple stream kicks off 1 p.m. Eastern on April 20th. Then if you haven't got enough of the tech events and our live streams, I am pleased / kind of like dismayed, I guess, to tell you that Samsung announced it's hosting its fourth event.
God damn
this
it.
This year.
God damn
it's
it.
A,
stop.
Announced another event, Galaxy Unpacked, set for April 28th. And to my mind, I was like, this is the second event this month. But actually, the last event was in March. So actually, it's the second event in spring.
So actually, they're taking a break. Only four events this year.
Four events in as many months. And, you know, it's time is infinitum for me. And I can't make sense of it all now. I will judge everything by the Samsung calendar now. Was it before Unpacked, after Unpacked, or around Galaxy S21? Anyhow, last time they unveiled the A series phones at an awesome event. Awesome phone. And now we're not sure what to expect, really. I mean, based on the rumor mill, maybe some PCs, like, it might be time for it to see a foldable, who knows, and maybe tablets, maybe wearables, lots of stuff that we don't really haven't seen from Samsung this year yet, I believe. We have seen the Galaxy Buds Pro or Plus this year, in addition to the S21 phones. So who knows what's to come? My money, I shouldn't. Actually, I do know what's to come, but I can't tell y'all, so just stay tuned. Yeah, but you know what phone has come out and has been announced? The Sony Xperia 1 Mark III.
Okay.
Holy crap. Remember Sony? Remember how they make phones?
They did make good phones, yeah.
They make really good phones. I mean, last year they made the 1 Mark II that got rave reviews for being kind of like the prosumer's camera phone. And, you know, this is basically the same phone, but like Sony has, according to Chris Velasco, who wrote this story up, according to him, Sony seems to have addressed pretty much everything we didn't like about the last one, which was the Mark II. Now, the Mark II didn't have 5G in the US. It didn't have like the nicest design, a little bit of an awkward design. And the focus was on camera over everything else. So maybe at the expense of some other software issues. So hey, if Sony has fixed a bunch of those things, like, you know, 5G and getting you some better software perhaps, that's like good news for people who love Sony's Xperia phones. It's obviously probably going to be pretty expensive as well. You can check out Chris Velasco's article on Engadget.com for the details on the camera technology. The Mark III, just so you know some of the basics, this is a 6.5-inch OLED screen, and Sony says it's the world's first 4K screen to refresh at 120 hertz.
This thing's not going to have any battery life. Why would you do that? Why would you do that? Oh my God. Anyway.
Who knows if it supports refreshing at that resolution? I don't know yet. We'll see.
4K on a screen that you can never really notice the 4K pixels. It's so dumb. So dumb.
21 by 9 aspect ratio, which is, you know, I guess closer to traditional, I guess, conventional flagships of today, as opposed to the really tall ones they did a while back.
That's still pretty tall. 21 by 9 is
still
tall,
yeah.
It's super tall, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, it also packs a Snapdragon 888. So this is one of those high-end, top-of-the-line. And The battery is a bit bigger than before at 4,500 milliamp hours. So Devendra's point about this dying on you pretty quickly, probably. 4,500 milliamp hour might last a while longer.
Not at 120 hertz 4K.
For that screen. And also, I feel like they could have gone bigger, you know? So...
Not big enough. 6.5 inches, not big enough. I'm sorry, Shulin. I'm sorry. Yeah. This is a, yeah. I don't know what Sony is doing here, but yeah, maybe people who love their cameras would love this.
6.5 inches. And
hello.
Hey. And a side-mounted fingerprint sensor, which we already knew before. And good news for headphone jack fans. People keep asking about that every now and then. 3.5 millimeter headphone jack is still there. So that's good news.
Hey.
We are going to have to test it, obviously, to know if it will perform well and be worth the money. No price information just yet because Sony in general doesn't really talk price. But last year, the Xperia 5 Mark II?
Uh-huh.
Xperia, I think, 1 Mark II. I'm not sure if this is a typo in the article. Xperia 5? No, we're talking about Xperia 5, a different phone now. Yep. The Xperia 1... probably will be like ballpark of 1,000 and more. So
yep.
That's our guess.
Was so expensive, yeah.
They've always been expensive. So anyhow, prosumer camera phone for Sony fans who probably won't mind paying for all of those things. Hey, speaking of phones.
Cool phones, honestly. Yeah, sounds really cool.
TCL.
Uh-huh.
It's not
Give
a name,
the name
I don't think
of this
anyone
phone.
Was expecting to hear me say when I said speaking of cool phones. TCL, famed maker of TVs.
The world's biggest TV maker. They are super successful now. Yeah.
They've been trying to make phones for like a while now. Chris Velasco says more than a year. I want to say like years now.
Years.
If you consider the fact that they've owned BlackBerry and Alcatel for a long time now, years, okay? But its own brand, maybe like just over a year. So it unveiled this week at an event a concept that it's calling the fold and roll.
Fold in apostrophe roll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Toys R Us, but fold and roll. And it's exactly as its name suggests. This is a phone.
Looks cool. It looks really cool.
They can fold and roll. I don't even know what else to say.
It is a phone screen. You can unroll it into a phablet screen that's like 8.8 inches and then pull it, like extend it to a tablet screen that is 10 inches. This is just a concept. I want to see this in a real working device, but this would be a cool idea. Listen, we're spending so much time talking about like garbage foldable phones from Samsung. We lived through a whole year of the original Galaxy Fold and like the fact that that was just a prototype. Now this is a device that, hey, it folds and it like extends a little. So it actually makes the device more of like a useful tablet. This is like bigger device. Like I feel like this is sort of the dream for a mobile device for me. Like something I can fit in my pocket, then expand a bit when I'm sitting on the couch, and then like tabletize, you know, when I want to watch more video or something.
I mean, look, and this isn't like brand spanking new for TCL, right? Like, first of all, I mentioned that they're a TV maker because TCL, you know, with that heritage, knows its screens. It knows its screen technologies. And it's been trying to innovate. So it's actually shown off concepts like this before.
Yeah.
It's done its own scroll style concept where I think last year or earlier this year, they unveiled a concept that unfurled two ways, like a proper scroll.
Uh-huh.
And it opened really long. and then it's also done foldables and it's done trifold. So like a Z-shaped foldable phone where you fold it twice. Yeah.
Yes.
So TCL is the king of concepts and king of wild, wacky concepts. They know how to catch your attention.
But you don't sound like you're impressed by this, Shulin. I mean, this is what our entire gadget lives have led to, is these weird ass screens that can extend and fold and do everything, you know?
I just think, like, kudos to them for getting everyone to be distracted by this shiny new thing. Because,
shiny
like,
concept.
Yeah, fold and roll. They were like, we've done the fold. We've done the roll. Let's put it together. Let's
do
this. And
that's
I was like...
That's just called innovation, Trillin. I don't know.
Dang, I don't even... I've seen some of their concepts in the past. Some of them were janky, let's be honest. But here's the other thing, right? Like, they've done so many concepts in the past. None of them have really come to pass. Like, none of them have mm-hmm. come to be. They've not actually made any of these. But TCL has promised, around the time of CES this year, the company said it's committed to delivering and following through on at least one of its concept phones and making that available for sale this year. So we'll see one such thing. And my money is on a more traditional foldable. And it's weird to say a foldable is traditional, but like a more tried and true and tried by its competitors kind of a device. It's more likely that what TCL is going to do is make it more affordable, because that's been the company's style, is to make cheaper variations of flagships.
But I'm saying, in 5 to 10 years, this is what I want in my pocket. I want a device that can like do all sorts of things. It does remind me of the days of like the multi-sliders, like the Helio Ocean that I've talked about before.
Aren't you nervous it is more prone to damage, though?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. But we, like, here's the thing. If we can actually master this, like, flexible screen technology so that it feels more like a magazine or something and not just, like a heavy metal thing in your pocket, I do think that could be really cool. But that is my sci-fi dream. We need entirely new. We need, like, liquid batteries to even make these things possible.
So much development has to happen. I want a phone that can fold in four. You know,
exactly.
I mean, like one of those.
Exactly.
Yeah. But anyway, those are ideas that seem out of this world. But there's been more news that is actually out of this world, and that is Google Earth.
Love the transition.
Our editor in chief, Dana Wollman, who loves puns, is going to love me for this. But Google Earth had its biggest update since 2017 announced this week. In fact, just today, this morning at 9 a.m. Eastern, the embargo lifted. Google Earth is adding 3D time-lapse videos. And that might sound very simple and straightforward just saying like that. But actually, if you think about it, the amount of data that has to come together for Google to produce something like this. Now, these are time-lapse videos of, changes to the Earth's surface over decades, over the last 4 decades or so. And you can look at how things like the Amazon rainforest have changed. You can look at how a glacier has retreated into, you know, itself or into the valley or into the gorges.
Because Google has this data, too. Like, that's what's interesting, right? Yeah.
So at the briefing, Google also had invited guests from the agencies that had teamed up with for this, including NASA, the U.S. Geological Survey, the European Space Agency, and their respective satellite projects. So Copernicus and NASA and the USGS's Landsat satellites. So it's the Sentinel 1 and Sentinel 2 under the ESA, and then it's Landsat 7 and 8. I can't remember the exact numbers. But anyway, the images and the number of images taken from these satellites, actually a lot of them are already available to the public to do whatever they want with, honestly. These agencies make it available. But Google has kind of compiled them and made them into time-lapse videos, because a snapshot in time can tell you one thing, but a time-lapse video shows you, like, impact over
time. It tells you a story.
It is really interesting. I think one of the examples they showed during the briefing was how Las Vegas has expanded as a city over the decades. And you can see how, like, it would expand eastward until it hits a mountain, and then it stops expanding and it goes northward. So
no, we can't go over the mountain. Can you view these time lapses from anywhere, or are they like specific things that they have created?
This is a question I wish I had asked, which is the sort of operating requirements, but you can just go into the Chrome browser, type g.co/timelapse to see these, and you can search any location you want in the world or take a guided tour that Google has curated in themes like our forest, urbanization, and that sort of stuff. Or you can, like, for me, I'm going to zoom right into Singapore, because I know Singapore has developed a lot over the last few decades.
I'm sure you could see a lot. Like, I'm really interested in charting the progress of the Amazon and how much is still being, like, destroyed. I was born not too far from the Amazon. Like, that is my place, you know, and it is shocking to see like how much we are destroying it, not doing anything about it.
It's insane. I had an early access to this time-lapse video stuff, and I ran it in Chrome, and I will say like it does take a while to load, and like, you know, it I'm using like an ultrabook, so it doesn't have like the most powerful processors or graphics, so it takes
a
while.
Isn't this all running in the cloud though? Like, is it processed locally, but the data's in the cloud?
Yeah, so mostly you're looking at internet stuff, but there is some, like, I will still say some lag, and I don't really know what the lag is coming from. Maybe I'm running too many browser tabs at the same time. But anyhow, you can also, not only can you view them for free, you can also download them. So the goal here, I think, on Google's end is to help educators, scientists, researchers have this stuff to help make their points clearer. So, like, imagine if you're in the classroom and like your teacher is like, well, so in Las Vegas, they built more buildings. Over 20 years, they built 7,000 buildings. Like, you know, you can think about numbers, or you can look at a video and have that displayed so clearly to you. So I thought that was really actually cool news from Google.
Is this only on the web, Sherlyn, or is it in the Google Earth app too?
It's also in the Google Earth app. In the Google Earth app, you can hit the ship's wheel icon, and it'll take you to the Voyager platform where you can look at time-lapse videos.
That's super cool. I also want to see this in Google Earth VR. I don't know if that's gotten there yet, but Google Earth VR is one of the coolest things I've ever seen. You should try that at some point, Sherlyn.
Google Earth is actually a surprisingly cool and underrated product, and it's nice to see the company still pay attention to Google Earth. We need to learn about the home planet that we're living on. You know, looking at Mars is fun, but like we also need to take care of
some
our
people
home.
Let's send some people to Mars, please. Like, let's just get the mess.
Yeah, but also we want to take care of our home, and this is a really good way to start. Yes. Hey, Devendra, did you have anything else in the land of chip news to tell us though?
I mean, some fun stuff. We saw some, kind of with no fanfare, AMD is just like, hey, we got new Ryzen 5000 chips with Radeon graphics. And these are the chips that you will see in some cheap desktops, because the key is they have some graphics capabilities. You could just plug this onto a desktop, plug in a monitor, and get going. You don't need a discrete GPU, but if you're building an actual PC, if you're building a gaming machine, it just feels like a stopgap, right? Maybe you want to build something until you can actually get a new Radeon card or a new NVIDIA card. This is just kind of a stopgap thing. So not super exciting. AMD does this for every generation of chips. But hey, the Ryzen 5000 with built-in graphics are coming soon. For a little more than the standalone Ryzen 5000. So yeah, that's exciting. I actually have some Ryzen hardware sitting around here that I need to like get to configuring, because I want to play with this stuff. Looks really cool. Let's move on to what we've been working on. I am in the middle of reviewing the Surface Laptop 4. This week has been hell for me, so I hope I am not working on much else. As of Tuesday at noon, I had like 5 or 6 embargoes already on the site. Like, make it stop. Sherlyn, what are you working on?
The story that I was talking about burning out from and having writer's block on, it's finally up. I'm very excited. It's still not the piece that I was envisioning it could be. I just generally am very ambitious. But it is a story about what would the internet look like without third-party cookies. And I have like a... I used to design websites, so like my understanding of cookies was from the first-party cookie perspective, but I never really thought about third-party cookies. So I decided to like talk to a lot of people. I talked to a lot of big companies, all on background, because apparently nobody wants to come on record to talk about privacy and advertising, because it's such a sensitive topic. Anyway, and the W3C and people who are proposing some of these new methods, alternatives to third-party cookie ad tracking, and kind of just envisioned what the internet would look like when Google for real disables third-party cookie tracking. And yeah, that's my little explainer on that. You should take a read if you want to know what's going on in that part of the internet, which is basically every part of the internet. And then like continuing to work on lots of Google embargoes. The Google Earth stuff is one of them. There was a set of Google Assistant updates that published yesterday, I believe. Again, time is really blurring for me. And then, you know, more secret things. I am testing out a new gadget, but I don't really want to talk about it just yet. It's not under embargo. I just don't really want to tell people about it just yet. I want to surprise everyone. So
you just want to tease us, and for no reason.
It'll be fun. I think people will like learning about this one. But yeah, that's me, just working and not telling people about it.
Oh my God. Working. I hope you have a chance to take a break. I have 2 days off that I had scheduled. Yay. And hey, the minute I freaking schedule 2 days off, Microsoft's like, hey, dude, hey, I got a laptop for you to review.
I was supposed to take a week off, and Samsung's like, nah, fam, unpacked. I'm like, all right, fine.
Again. Yeah. Never unpack, actually, because you're never leaving Samsung, apparently.
Never. I'm never.
Let's move on to our pop culture picks. What's up? What do you want to recommend, Trillin?
So I see your pick, and I can't wait to talk about that. I think my pick this week might be one that you approve of.
Okay.
And this, I need to shout out to someone on Twitter. I can't remember the username off him, who recommended me when I asked for comedy ideas. Mythic Quest on Apple TV Plus.
Where were you last year, Sherlyn? I told you to watch this.
I know.
Yes.
If no one else, stop. Okay.
I told you to watch it last year.
Yes, and someone else on Twitter did. It's really, I know you like, see, this is your approval, except for coming from a place of very weird, like, where were you last year? But anyway.
I specifically told you, Sherlyn Lowe, to watch the show.
No, you tell me a lot of things, Devendra. It just gets like backed up to my cloud.
Shout out to a random Twitter user that Sherlyn listens to.
Exactly. And also Apple TV Plus. But yeah, this is from the people behind It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, who, by the way, the show I just started rewatching, which is, it's making me laugh out loud.
I can't watch that show, but I love Mythic Quest, so.
Mythic Quest is much better, I think, just because it's more modern looking and involves like a slightly different, like a more diverse cast to start with.
Most definitely. It's Always Sunny is a weird show because the best way I can describe it is grimy. Like it's a grimy show about losers who are kind of racist and awful. But anyway, Mythic Quest is good. Mythic Quest
is from the creators, producers of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So Charlie Day is an EP and Rob, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name. McElhenney. Stars Charlotte Nicdow, NICDAO.
Who I love. She's so good. Yeah.
She's amazing Australian actress. And also Danny Pudi. Who is Abed in Community.
You're missing Oscar nominee. I think Oscar winner F. Murray Abraham is in this show.
Yeah, I was getting to it. I was going from right to left picture that we're looking at. But okay. F. Murray Abraham, also great. And basically a strong cast, really good writing. And this show is about, for those who might not know, clearly everyone in the world apparently knows about this show now. It's about this game developing company. So right within kind of our scope of coverage. And a bunch of people who are trying to improve and enhance and keep updating their big game, Mythic Quest. So kind of like, I don't know, Overwatch? No, not.
It's
not
an MMO. It's an MMO.
I don't even know what the real world equivalent is. Not Minecraft.
Like
not
World of
Fortnite,
Warcraft type thing.
Thank you. World of Warcraft.
One of those things. Yeah.
And they announced expansion. So season one's Raven's Quest. And so the reason I bring it up this week too is because this Friday, I believe, they're releasing a new episode. Oof. One of the in-between season episodes, and I'm really stoked to watch that. The first of their in-between season episodes was released a while back. It was shot in the quarantine during the pandemic.
It was
really well written. I didn't you'd think you'd get tired of Zoom shows, shows that were shot through Zoom, but this was it had a creative finale, and I really liked it. It was had a very emotional heart to it. So
it was the only Zoom thing, because it was produced early in the pandemic. That was in March or April, right? And it is the only one that I think effectively used the way we were living in that world. Yeah. It's so wild.
Very well. And F. Murray Abraham, I believe, also had to figure out Zoom for the first time. So some of that translated. And it was great. This show is ridiculously funny. It's not as warm, heartwarming as Ted Lasso. It's a bit different in vibe. Mm-hmm. But it's laugh out loud funny. I just enjoyed it. It's not enough. I can't wait for the new season. And then also there's a new trailer released this week. So hopefully we'll get to see season two, May 7th, I believe is the date, sometime in May.
Yeah.
I can't wait. It's great.
Love this show so much. I'm trying to get everybody to see it. It is, I think it kind of hits the range of Ted Lasso eventually, but it's also it's also crueler. It's also like, you know, it's more LOL. It's a different type of vibe, but I do think it hits those points. Did you finish the first season, Trillin?
I finished all of it. Everything. So, quarantine episode, everything, yeah.
Yeah, one thing I'll tell people is like, hey, the first few episodes, it does take a while to get going. There's also like an episode in the middle that is just like completely like an indie rom-com movie in a way.
The one with Kristen Bonnie. It was beautiful. I didn't even know what was going on. I was like, is this a different show?
What's happening?
But then it's a similar theme, and then it comes back full circle at the end, and it's beautiful. It's really well done.
Kristen Milioti and Jake Johnson from New Girl, and I love Jake Johnson. I just want him in more things. So, hey, watch Mythic Quest. If you have watched Ted Lasso, you want more comedy, Mythic Quest is a good one.
Yeah. Again, not as heartwarming, but it's freaking great. What about you, Dev? What are you watching?
Oh, yeah. I have been watching Invincible on Amazon Prime. This is the new superhero show from Robert Kirkman. I believe you've seen some too, Sherlyn.
Yes.
And you talked to Robert Kirkman. You interviewed him on the show. So I've seen a couple of these. Have to say, I looked at the trailers for this early on, and I hated the animation style. And
right. The style was not great. Yeah.
It just seems like it's very cheap. Basically, it's a show that is meant to look a lot like the original Invincible comic, but there's like very, very little motion in the animation at times. Like sometimes the animation is just static images, people's faces don't it's very 90s, very 70s, very like Justice League. Justice League cartoon, you know? It just feels cheap as hell because they have a huge cast, which includes J.K. Simmons and Stephen Yeun. And like ton of celebrities.
So many big names, yeah.
So many big names. I'm liking the show. I think it's a really interesting spin on superheroes. I will say, I think the first 45 minutes of the first episode is a complete misdirection because it kind of... It just feels like, hey, we're just doing DC again. We're just doing Justice League again with like copycat characters.
Well, it's hard to get through,
Yeah, and then it changes. Like, so watch the first episode. Watch to the end of the first episode if you don't know what's going on with the show. Then I think it gets a little more interesting. And it does kind of play with our notions of superheroes. And I like that. And I'm thinking of like, maybe it is interesting how on streaming services, so between this... And The Boys and Doom Patrol on HBO Max. And even the like Justice League Snyder Cut. These things are only possible on streaming services.
Yes.
I wonder if like there is a kind of a point there. So I'll wrestle around with that. I think Invincible
Have
is a lot of fun.
Have you listened to the interview with Robert Kirkman? Because
this is exactly
what we talked about. Yeah, yeah.
So
like for the listener and the viewer right now, if you haven't already checked out our episode with the interviews of Robert Kirkman, and also Devendra spoke with the person behind Calls on Apple TV Plus, I guess. Go check it out. And Invincible, like Devendra said, takes a hard turn at the end of the first episode.
These episodes are so long. They're like 50-minute episodes. They're not like the bite-sized 30-minute ones
you're probably used to.
So they're long. I'm digging it, though. I think the story is good. The cast is good. I wish to spend a little more money on the animation. There's a shot that is there's a shot that's on Giphy that people have used to like share the show. It's literally Invincible standing freeze frame on a building and the camera's panning out and like a flock of birds goes by him. But if you just like take a second and look at those birds, it is a static image of birds that they just dragged across the screen. Like
they
some goddamn
wings, right?
They're
just
they didn't flap their wings. It just looks like clip art. It looks like something I used to make. There was this Spider-Man game that existed in the 90s. Like the Spider-Man make your own comic game. Literally doing that all over again on Amazon Prime. Anyway, so I wish it didn't look bad, but I think it is worth watching. Check out Invincible.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Ellman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, or podcasting about movies and TV at the /filmcast at /film.com.
If you want to give me recommendations for TV shows I will promptly forget and then bring up a year later, I'm at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter. Email us your thoughts and feedback at podcastandengadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes. And subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify. 29 by 21 boy, 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 boy.